All right, coming at you all the way live from the lower bottoms of West Oakland. This is Revolution. Today I have on special guest, professor and author, Aviva Chomsky. Today we're going to discuss her book, Undocumented. I have been reading it recently. I was speaking to, should I refer to you as Professor Chomsky?
You can call me Avi.
Oh, you broke up on me.
You can call me Avi.
Avi, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I was speaking with Avi earlier before we started recording about how I had fallen down a rabbit hole of her videos talking about the history of the way we view immigration in this country. And there's a part of the book that I actually had highlighted in the introduction where she says, most citizens who rail against the undocumented insist that their opposition is based solely on technical legal grounds. They oppose people who broke the law, but becoming undocumented is a highly racialized crime. Nationality itself has its origins in racial thinking and still bases itself on birth and origin in ways that echo racialism. The categories, quote unquote, Mexican and quote unquote Latino have been racialized in the United States, and the category of illegality is heavily associated with the category, quote, Mexican. Whether this is understood as a nationality, an ethnicity, or race. In 2011, 93% of federal immigration crimes were committed by non-citizens, and 89.3% of them were committed by Hispanics. Another way to look at the racialized nature of undocumentedness is to compare the criminalization of immigrants, especially Latino immigrants, in the post-civil rights era with the criminalization of blacks. So hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you could hear me. So when I first saw your video and you talking about the myths of immigration, and then I think about especially where we are today, where those myths have taken us today, where we are literally, or I shouldn't say we, but our administration is literally trying to build a wall across the U.S.-Mexican border and literally imprisoning children and separating them from their parents. A lot of what I see when it comes to people that are pro the wall and pro these immigration policies tends to be believing in a lot of these myths that you really do a great job of dispelling in this book, especially when it comes to the my parents came here the right way.
Mm-hmm. So I have to say, listening to you.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, now I can hear you. Okay, because you're just cutting out. I'm sorry. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, listening to you read that passage makes me think about, I wrote that in 2012, 2013. That book was published in 2014. It makes me think about what has stayed the same and what has changed since I wrote it. I think that during the Obama era and previous eras, Bush, Clinton, there was a much bigger attempt to separate, to draw this hard and bright line between legal and illegal immigration. And under Trump, at least from the administration, we're hearing a lot more simple anti-immigrant rhetoric, that all immigrants are being criminalized rather than just undocumented immigrants. So I think there's been a kind of a shift in official rhetoric about immigration. Obama and Bush and Clinton emphasized much more that this is a country of immigrants, but then there's just a few bad guys, the criminals, the illegal immigrants. Whereas Trump doesn't really care about the immigrant narrative and that kind of multicultural narrative that was being promoted. And not just by Democrats, because George Bush also had a much more pro-immigrant stance. So illegalizing much more immigration. Another thing that I think has changed since I wrote that is that I think immigration now is becoming much more associated with Central Americans and not just Mexicans. Although I do note that despite Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric and his recent policies against guest workers, he's still allowing Mexican agricultural workers to come into the country because the agricultural industry is going to collapse without Mexican migrant workers. So, but shifting everything into the guest worker program is just another way of making immigrants more exploitable, because the guest worker program ties immigrants to employers in ways that make them extremely vulnerable to any kind of mistreatment by their employer, because they can immediately be deported if they raise their voices about anything. But that's mostly going on under the radar. And publicly and officially, I think we're seeing, I mean, first of all, the numbers of Mexicans have gone down, the numbers of Central Americans have gone up. But I think in the public eye, that association that I made of undocumented immigration with Mexicans has shifted to Central Americans. But just one other thing I wanted to say about past and present, and this is in response to the comment you made, Trump did not begin this wall.
Yeah.
The wall has been an ongoing project through many administrations. And the emphasis on building the wall really goes back to the early 1990s. So yes, we need to blame Trump for what Trump is doing, but let's not let previous administrations off the hook. That is, Trump is sort of an extreme, at least in his rhetoric and in his policies, I guess, an extreme version of what we've been seeing all along. It's not like he invented this. He is building on foundations that were built by his predecessors. Okay, I just wanted to make those comments on what you read and what you said. Now you can go on and ask your question.
I was also watching a video of you recently. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I was watching a video of you recently, and I didn't get a chance to finish it, of you speaking about how we always say we're a nation of immigrants. And there's a certain master narrative, as you put it, that all politicians echo, that, you know, we all came here, or our origins, we came here from England. And then we formed this society, and everybody came here on a boat as an immigrant. Therefore, we should view our immigration policies a certain way. Mm-hmm. Can you really break that down and explain why that is just not the case? Because that doesn't really explain the way we look at illegality when we look at it from that way, because it really makes it seems like there's a right way to come here and a wrong way to come here, right?
Yeah. You want me to explain that?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
So there's a lot of problems inherent in that we're a country of immigrants. In some ways, it's very true. But it hides a very ugly history of the United States. And I think we need to highlight the ugliness of and racism of that history in order to understand what's going on with that phrase and why it holds such power and the uses that it's put to. So a better way of saying we are a country of immigrants, a more honest way would be to say we are a settler colonial country. That is, we are a country that was established by white people, by and for white people, on mm-hmm. indigenous lands and tied into the establishment of the country and the settler colonial project was the kidnapping and enslavement of Africans and their forced transport to the new country, which they were not part of. So when we say we are a country of immigrants, we're talking about white immigrants. But we pretend that this is an open multicultural thing to say so we can like pat ourselves on the back and say we're a country of immigrants. That shows how welcoming we are. We've always welcomed immigrants. That makes us sound like we're really tolerant and open and multicultural. But that's not what the history of that comment means. It refers mm-hmm. to an actual history of a country founded on the basis of white supremacy. Only white people could be citizens of the new country that was founded at the end of the 18th century. And if you go back to the Declaration of Independence, you see that one of the objections, one of the motivations for the revolution was that King George was trying to limit immigration, that is white immigration, mm-hmm. that is British migration to America. Now, why was he trying to limit migration? And why did the colonizers, and I think language is important, we should call them colonizers, not colonists. They were colonizers. They were colonizing somebody else's land. Why did the colonizers want more immigration? Because they were trying to expand their white settler colonial project, while the British Crown was trying to limit the white settler colonial project because it was busy investing in its empire in other parts of the world, and it really did not want to invest more in Indian wars in the Americas. So the colonizers felt abandoned, and they did not want to accept the restrictions on colonization that the British Crown was imposing. They wanted more immigration, and they wanted more expansion. And again, immigration means white immigration, because only white people, when the new country set up its citizenship laws and naturalization laws, they did everything they possibly could to encourage more immigration. But immigration meant white people. Citizenship was restricted to white people. And that remained the case until after the Civil War, that only white people could become citizens of the new country. So the encouragement of migration, and in fact, before and after the Civil War, new states could only be added to the Union after they had achieved a white majority. So after the Civil War, there are some changes in citizenship and naturalization law. The 14th Amendment in 1868 creates citizenship by birth. This mm-hmm. is brand new. Any person who is born in the United States is going to be a citizen thereof, except Native Americans. They are excluded from the 14th Amendment. But anybody else who's born in the territory of the United States is automatically a citizen. The purpose of this was to grant citizenship to the descendants of formerly enslaved Africans after emancipation. It was part of Reconstruction. It was part of acknowledging the situation that had been created by the forced transport and enslavement and granting citizenship rights to those formerly enslaved and their descendants. The naturalization law that followed this in 1870 makes it clear that the only people who the citizenship by birth was intended for were former slaves. The naturalization law passed in 1870, for the first time opens up naturalization is for people to newly arrived people to obtain citizenship. And until 1870, it was restricted to white people. In 1870, it was expanded to include not only white people, but also persons of African nativity or African descent. Mm-hmm. And nobody else. Now think about 1870. How many persons of African nativity are coming to the United States in 1870? Pretty much none. That is, the United States was not a land of opportunity for people in Africa. The United States was a land of enslavement for people in Africa. There was literally no migration going on from Africa to the United States in 1870. But there were other non-white people who were migrating to the United States and who were still excluded from the new naturalization law in 1870. In particular, Chinese,
the Irish,
and Mexicans. No, the Irish were white. They were European. There was no question about that. They were discriminated against.
At this point, they're white now?
They were always white. Once the category of white became legally defined, there was no question that the Irish belonged to it.
Gotcha.
So there was social discrimination against the Irish, but there was no legal discrimination against the Irish. They were white. There were no restrictions on their citizenship. So that's really important to remember, because when some people use that, oh, but we're all immigrants and immigrants were always discriminated against. Yes, but white immigrants were not discriminated against in the way people of color were discriminated against. They're completely different beasts that we're talking about here. So the Irish were never excluded from immigration and citizenship. But who was excluded from that new naturalization law were Chinese and Mexican migrants who were not considered white. Chinese and Mexican migrants were excluded from naturalization on racial grounds. They were considered racially ineligible to citizenship. Now, the problem was this created a conflict between the 14th Amendment, which created citizenship by birth, and the naturalization law, which created a racial eligibility for citizenship. Only white people and people of African descent could become citizens. So what happens to the children of Mexican and Chinese migrants who are born in the United States? It creates a logical impossibility. They're racially excluded from citizenship. They're racially ineligible to citizenship, is the language that was used by the courts and the Congress. But they can become citizens by birth. So Congress immediately moved to resolve this by creating two different categories outside of the naturalization law. Chinese, who were racially ineligible to citizenship, were simply excluded. First with the Page Law in 1873, and then the Chinese Exclusion Act in 1882. This caused a huge labor shortage on the West Coast and the Southwest, and agricultural and mining interests and railroad interests demanded that they retain access to Mexican workers. So a whole new category was created for Mexicans. Their immigration was not restricted at all, or that is, their border crossing was not restricted at all. They were actively recruited by U.S. railroad and other corporate interests in Mexico at the end of the 19th and throughout the 20th century and up till today, but only as temporary workers, not as immigrants, not as potential citizens. Mm-hmm. So the origins of the guest worker programs that we have today, Mexican guest worker programs that Trump is trying to emphasize today, go all the way back to the 1870s and to those racial restrictions on immigration. So Mexicans were created as this uniquely deportable category of migrants who everything was done to set up to make sure that they could not have children and become citizens by birth. So these included guest worker programs like the two Bracero programs in the early 20th century. It included mass deportations and this category of seasonal migrant workers and guest workers. So when we say that we are a country of immigrants, we need to understand the white supremacy built into that statement. That is, we are a country that has always welcomed white immigration. And when Trump makes a comment like, why do we want immigrants from those so-called shithole countries? We want more immigrants from countries like Norway. And everybody gets up all in arms. How can he say this? We're a country that's always welcomed immigrants. Actually, Trump is more accurate than the liberals who are complaining. That is, we are in fact a country that has always welcomed white immigrants and always placed restrictions and rejections on people who want to immigrate who are not white. Okay.
It feels like to me, from what I see, that we use immigration almost as a way to control labor.
Absolutely.
Like to keep wages low.
So I wouldn't say that exactly, because it's not immigration that keeps wages low. It's bosses that keep wages low.
Or maybe I should say immigrants.
I still would reframe the way you're saying that. That is, employers have demanded that the government enforce systems that allow them to exploit workers. And guest worker systems are one of those systems. But lack of labor legislation is another one of those systems. That is, union busting is another one of those systems. So immigrants don't keep wages low. Bosses keep wages low.
I guess it didn't come out. That didn't come out right. That's pretty much what I was trying to say, that bosses use that system as they want to exploit that labor and that system as a way to keep wages low, not immigrants themselves come in here to try to keep wages low.
Well, I mean, I guess I would also say that Americans and racism allow bosses to mistreat immigrant workers. But not just immigrant workers, workers of color in general, and workers in general. So, you know, just think about what we saw with the coronavirus, when suddenly essential workers were brought into the public eye. Who are these essential workers? They're the people who work in warehouses. They're the people who work in agriculture. They're the people who work in meatpacking plants. They're the people who work in elder care. These are the essential workers of our economy. Most of them are people of color. Many of them are immigrants. Pretty much all of them work under really terrible conditions. They have little room to protest those conditions. And the whole system and structure that uses racism as one way of justifying the mistreatment of certain large groups of people. It creates segregated neighborhoods where people live in crowded conditions. It denies people access to health care. It makes them vulnerable to their employers, the whims of their employers. And our government is supporting all of this. I think that this societal reliance on underpaid, exploited, poorly treated workers for the work that we consider essential to our society. Again, it's a system that works to exploit people, and people of color, including immigrants, are overrepresented in those being exploited. And of course, they are thus overrepresented among those who are vulnerable to COVID-19, among many other health-related conditions that immigrants and people of color suffer from disproportionately due to their placement at the bottom of society in every way. That includes poor neighborhoods, poor schools, poor job opportunities, and a legal structure that justifies their mistreatment and exploitation.
I mean, I see it here, even where I work. I work at one of the emergency shelters here in Oakland that we have for the unhoused community. And the majority of us, I would say over 90% of us, from the cleaning staff to the housing navigators to shelter monitors, we're all people of color.
Mm-hmm. And that's typical.
And
you're not an
no
exception.
One's running for this job to work with COVID positive, unhoused people.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get our food delivered, you know, it's the same, you know, brown person that's coming to deliver our food or black person that's coming to deliver our food, because, you know, this is the one thing that's hiring. A lot of us don't have Zoom jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I agree with everything you're saying. And it also puts us in a precarious situation because we don't have a lot of rights.
Absolutely.
You know, so many of us are just happy to be working and to be making the amount of money that we're making. It's like, well, I'm going to shut up now and ride this out until I can't ride this out anymore. And it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, just I think if there's one thing that we've seen with COVID-19, it's that, and I'm hoping that we're seeing this as a nation. And I think this is what a lot of the protests were for, is the holes in our system and the exploitive nature of our system.
Absolutely.
And that's why I wanted to talk to you today, because I think your book really explains that. And we don't talk about it right now. It's not part of the conversation, unfortunately, because, you know, Trump is always a part of the conversation because he says something ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
And this very frightening pandemic that we're all in the middle of is of course, going to be part of the conversation, as it should be. But the way that we're treating our brown and black people in this country is so, what's the right word? I was down in El Paso not long after they really started showing what was going on with the child separation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that there's people that kind of flippantly say, well, you know, they should have came here the right way.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
my parents did.
Yeah. And it's almost always white people who say, my parents did come here the right way. And what they're missing is that the laws have been deliberately constructed from independence on to encourage white people to come here and to become citizens, and to make it almost impossible for non-white people to do the same.
Mm-hmm. And
my ancestors came here the right way, basically what you're saying is my ancestors benefited from white supremacy. That's true, but you shouldn't be so proud of it. you should acknowledge it and think about how we can make reparations for the injustices of the past that have created our unequal society today. And if you were one of the beneficiaries, you should recognize it, but you shouldn't be proud of it. Shouldn't brag about it. Mm-hmm. I think it makes you better than other people.
And in closing, I know you don't have much time. What is your hope for the next administration's immigration policies?
Oh, that's a tough one. I hope that the next administration will not be a Trump administration. I do think that a Biden administration, if that's what it comes down to, will be forced to roll back some of the most horrifying new policies that Trump has put into place. I even think a Biden administration, and of course it depends what happens in Congress, would encourage something like the DREAM Act, which has been under discussion for years, and the failure of the DREAM Act to pass Congress, the DREAM Act, which would create a path to citizenship for young people who were brought to the United States as children. You know, there's a lot of problems with the construction of the DREAM Act because it really fits into the Obama era narrative of good and bad immigrants, like the children were brought here through no fault of their own. Well, whose fault was it? According to Obama, mm-hmm. it was their parents' fault. And that's not how the Dreamers themselves see it. If you listen to what they have to say, my parents are not criminals. I'm grateful to my parents for bringing me here so that I could have a better life. But despite its flaws in promoting this narrative, the DREAM Act does help to humanize immigrants in the eyes of the non-immigrant public and would create better lives for many people who are in the United States without status and could be seen as a step towards a larger immigration reform. I think the American Friends Service Committee does a really good job on their website, so I recommend that people look at it as to what would a really humane immigration policy look like. We are so far from that, and I don't really have hopes that even a Biden administration and a Democratic Congress is going to give us a truly humane immigration policy. But certainly, we can pull back on some of the worst aspects of what's been happening for the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe steps towards a more humane policy.
Well, I'm not going to keep you. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you talking to me today and struggling through these technical issues we were having earlier.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure.
I'm going to play some music. Please don't hang up.
Okay.